Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the 2018 Jefferies Global Healthcare Conference. It's my pleasure to introduce Rosty Raykov, the CEO of Fennec Pharmaceuticals. And just to note, directly after this session, we have a breakout room downstairs in the Juilliard room, and that's where Rosty will take your questions. Here.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you for all of you attending this conference. It has been our third time here, and I see every year more better attended, given that it's 4:00 P.M., so I appreciate everyone being here. So these are the regular safe harbor statements. Cisplatin is a mainstay therapy in pediatric cancer. It's widely used since its early adaptation in the 1980s. What pediatric oncologists have been able to achieve is quite remarkable in many of the solid tumors in pediatrics that are treated with cisplatin. Today, we have greater than 80% survival. This survival has come at a cost. When you interview physicians that treat these children with cisplatin, their number one complaint is that these kids have hearing loss after the treatment of cisplatin or ototoxicity. It is permanent, and it's irreversible. So I would say over the last 5 years, there has been great emphasis on the quality of life of these patients, because as many of them live, their quality of life is quite poor. So we're developing a drug by the name of PEDMARK, which is a unique formulation specifically designed for the treatment of these children. If approved, will be the first drug for the prevention of cisplatin-induced hearing loss in these pediatric populations. We have 7.5 years of exclusivity in Europe due to the orphan drug designation, the pediatric orphan drug designation, as well as we have 10 years exclusivity in Europe upon approval for a pediatric use marketing authorization. We've accomplished quite a bit since we've been involved in this company in the last 9 years. We have conducted, in cooperation with two cooperative groups, two phase III studies, a proof of concept study, COG-ACL-0431, which achieved its primary endpoint for the prevention of hearing loss. It was published in Lancet Oncology. And the second, the pivotal study, which is in liver cancer in very, very young children, that study read out last October, confirming the results of the COG study for the prevention of hearing loss. And that study is now in preparation, basically of filing these studies with the FDA and EMA. So as I mentioned earlier, ototoxicity in many of these tumor types that are treated with cisplatin is dose-limiting. Many times what we see is that physicians are put in a very tough spot where they have to, as soon as they see the ototoxicity, they have to dose interrupt, dose reduce, switch from cisplatin to carboplatin, which carboplatin is less ototoxic, but at the same time, it's not as effective. These kids usually lose their high-frequency hearing. They lose the ability to hear consonants. They lose the ability to hear background noise. It's very, very devastating of very young children, the infants, where they're in the process of acquiring language skills. Once they lose the ability to hear, their IQ does not properly develop. It's highly problematic in older children, where their quality of life is quite impacted by it. Many of them report withdrawal, depression. Some of them are suicidal as they try to cope with living without hearing. And the main paper for this that was done a few years ago reports 60% incidence of hearing loss in children that are treated with cisplatin. As I mentioned earlier, the quality of life is quite devastating for the care for the families as well as the patients. And you can see here, usually what these children get is they get hearing aid or a cochlear implant. So I'm on the next slide. So what you can see here is they followed neuroblastoma survivors. These patients were treated before the age of 5, and then they followed them how they did at school in third grade, sixth grade, and ninth grade. So at third grade, 30% of them are held back at least one grade. And by the time they reach ninth grade, almost half of them were held back at least one grade, which speaks to the quality of life of these patients, as well as their future earning. So two factors influence the hearing loss. One is age. So what we see is the younger the child is, the greater the hearing loss. And the second one being the obvious one is the cumulative cisplatin dose. The higher the cisplatin dose, the greater the hearing loss. So roughly there are 5,000 patients in the U.S. every year that have solid tumors and are treated with cisplatin. Amongst them, roughly two-thirds of them, at least two-thirds of them, have low to intermediate risk tumors. These are tumors that have 80% plus survival, and roughly one-third of them are patients with high-risk disease where the survival is 40 to 50%. Similar numbers in Europe. So we think the available population here is 10,000 patients. So sodium thiosulfate has been approved in the past. It comes in a kit as a cyanide antidote poisoning. It is used sequentially with sodium nitrate. If you look at the prescribing information in this kit, what you see is that there's no human, for obvious reasons, there's no human data available. We can't even find animal data. It's one of these grandfather drugs back in the day. So PEDMARK will be the first drug developed in pediatrics with human safety and efficacy data, which is quite important. So the drug is administered over 15 minutes. It's a 20 grams per meter square, and the importance being that it's 6 hours separated from cisplatin. STS on its own is recognized as quite safe. Mechanistically, how it works, it's a rescue agent to bound platinum. The half-life of cisplatin is very, very short. It's about 20 to 30 minutes. By the time STS is administered, which is 6 hours later, there is very little of the unbound platinum present, if any. So, and there's a Nature article that basically shows that the bound platinum enters the cochlear at a delayed fashion. And this is when STS comes in, binds irreversibly to the bound platinum and excretes it out rapidly. So we're a rescue agent to bound platinum. So this is the first study, which is the proof of concept study. It was done by Children Oncology Group. Dr. Fryer was the lead on it. The study published in the Lancet Oncology a couple years ago. The aim of the study was to measure whether or not the patients that got STS, what hearing loss they experienced with graded under the ASHA criteria. It was a highly, highly heterogeneous population. You see that on the next slide. But you could see that cisplatin was given per the investigator standard for each disease severity, and we're speaking here about multi-drug regimens. So the only difference being plus or minus STS at 6 hours. So you could see here from this next slide the heterogeneity of the population. This is a close to real life study that you'll find. This is what a pediatric oncologist sees in terms of his population of patients. You can see the germ cells, the hepatoblastomas, medulloblastomas. PNET is actually a slightly different disease than medulloblastoma with slightly different survival. Nevertheless, they're grouped together in this study. Neuroblastoma, osteosarcoma, which is a bone tumor, which is actually quite tough. And then you have other tumors as well. And they also try to stratify the best that they can although there was not an upfront stratification for localized disease versus disseminated disease. So what you could see here is that the study met its primary endpoint. So sodium thiosulfate, 56% of the patients without STS had hearing loss, very similar to the paper that reported the overall incidence being 60%. And the patient that took STS had 29% hearing loss. So the risk reduction was reduced in half. In a pre-specified group of children under the age of 5, this was even more pronounced, where 71% had hearing loss versus 21%. Again, highly statistical p-value. When they looked at the event-free survival and overall survival curves, what they found is that there was no difference between the two. However, at 2 years and later, there was a clear separation to the detriment of STS. There were basically 6 excess deaths in the STS arm, which made the investigators do a post hoc analysis of these to identify where, you know, what could be causing this. And in their post hoc analysis, what they found is that in localized disease, there was no difference in event-free survival and overall survival, but the 6 excess deaths occurred in disseminated disease. Now, we do not understand how mechanistically STS could cause that, given that in the label of cisplatin, the antitumor activity is done by the unbound platinum, not by the bound. So when we administer, there's very little unbound left. And we highly doubt that that's important for disease control. But nevertheless, this is their finding, and we have to present it as such. We have a second study, which is the CYPO-6 study, which is actually quite important because unlike the COG study, it picked one disease, so which is standard risk hepatoblastoma. It's an ultra-rare liver disease. It occurs in babies that are 13 months old. The aim of the study is, again, to measure the hearing loss in this population. Cisplatin is given here as monotherapy, so unlike the COG study where you have multi-drug regimen, here you have just the cisplatin as a monotherapy. And unlike the COG study where you had high-risk patients as well in it with metastatic disease, here you only have localized tumor. So it's a very, very clean study. And you could see these are the patients get treated with 4 cycles of cisplatin, then they have delayed surgery, and then 2 additional cycles of cisplatin versus cisplatin plus STS at a 6-hour delay. So the study reported these results last October. You could see there were 67% with patients without STS that had hearing loss versus 37%. Again, very similar to the COG study, the risk of hearing loss is reduced in half, which is very, very significant. You could also look at across different Braak grades of the damage to the hearing. Again, almost in every grade, you have a reduction of the risk of hearing loss across. The important one being, on the next slide, the event-free survival and overall survival, there was no difference. In fact, there were 4 deaths on the cisplatin arm versus 2 deaths on the cisplatin plus STS. So you could see this is a follow-up of 52 months for these patients. Typically with hepatoblastoma, after 2 years, the disease does not recur back. So you have a very, very high survival, and the quality of life of these kids, it's for the ones that took STS, is actually much better. So what do we know from both studies? Unfortunately, you know, we did not have a disseminated disease in the CYPO-6 study, so we haven't really answered the disseminated disease question. But I think it's very clear that the drug works on the hearing, works very well on the hearing, works very well on the hearing of in very young patients, where the need is the greatest. It also confirms the post hoc analysis, at least on the localized disease, that there's no difference in survival. So where we are today with regulators. We recently received a fast track and a breakthrough therapy designation for this by the FDA. We are working tirelessly to be in a position to file with the FDA by the end of the year. And we expect the approval sometimes in the second half next year. So this is a bit on our company. We have a market valuation of about a couple hundred million dollars. We're well cashed up. We have $27 million of cash at the end of the first quarter. We are very proud of how we burned cash in these companies. Our cash burn last year was $4 million. This year will be higher than that as we're manufacturing drug and have a bunch of other activities. But the cash that we have is good until the end of 19 when we launch the product. We have a very strong and supportive institutional shareholder base. Many of these funds have been with us since day one, and it's been fantastic to have them as great supporters to what we're doing. We also have a strategic investor, Sigma Tau, who have quite a bit of experience in pediatric oncology. They also have a representative on our board, Dr. Marco Bruguera, who leads their organization. They had a drug by the name of Oncaspar that was sold to pediatric oncologists, and about a year ago they sold it to Baxalta for $1 billion. Also, you can see from our board, he's quite experienced in the pediatric oncology space. Dr. Khalid Islam, who is our chairman, ran Gentium for a long time and ultimately sold it to Jazz for $1 billion. And again, the use for that drug was many patients in pediatric oncology with stem cell transplants had to use defibrotide. And obviously Adrian Haig, who's been with us for a while, he also came from the Gentium organization from the commercial side. And we also have Chris Rallis, who is a lawyer by training but has quite a bit of operational experience back in the day with Triangle Pharmaceuticals. And as far as our team, we're a small team. We're three full-time employees. We fully utilize consultants. We, as a company, control close to 9%, I think, is the fully diluted share count. So heavy inside ownership. We treat our investors as our partners. We don't necessarily, we don't dilute the company unnecessary. And overall, I think we've done a very good job at keeping the capital structure proper to realize the value of this drug. And so with that, I would like to open it up for questions. Yes. So the question is, what is our thinking on pricing? So there are two benchmarks to that. One is, what is a cochlear implant cost in the U.S.? And what is the cost in Europe, of course, as well? And what is the cost of hearing aid for these children? So the hearing aid in the U.S. is between $3,000 to $5,000. It has to be replaced every 4 to 5 years. The cochlear implant, so they have unilateral and bilateral. The bilateral one could be close to a couple hundred thousand dollars. The unilateral is $100,000, just to give you an idea. And if you go on YouTube and type in what does a child hear with a hearing aid or with a cochlear implant, you could find out that it's suboptimal. It's really it restores very little of the hearing. And that's what we have today. So I think it's important to kind of, from a business perspective, to make sure that the investors realize the return on their investment, but at the same time, you also have the, you know, a greater value here, which is that we are going to provide real benefit for these patients. So, but I gave you some benchmarks in terms of what the potential relative to these devices that are there. Yes? We're manufacturing in the U.S. We do not own the manufacturing facility. It's contract manufactured, yeah.
Is there any special handling and manufacturing?
So So no, it's regular injectable product. So the COG study was done at 16 grams per meter square, and we are done, and the Cyapil 6 study was done at 20 grams per meter square of STS. And it was, so the question was about the dose of STS in both studies. So the first study is 16 grams per meter square, the second study is 20 grams per meter square. No, because you could see the effect on the hearing, right? I mean, the effect of the hearing is quite strong.
Yeah, but it wasn't better than the
20 grams. Well, the relative risk reduction is about the same, by half. Sorry, what is the question? What will be our proposed dose? So that depends a lot on what the ultimate label of the drug looks like. So if the label of the drug is for hepatoblastoma, that's what we've guided, it will be 20 grams per meter square. If the label of the drug is wider, then it would include the COG study, so it would be between 16 to 20 grams per meter square. Yes, one more. And so the question is, have we had any interactions with FDA or Europe on potential expansion of the label beyond hepatoblastoma? So we are preparing to file both studies. So we're not preparing to file only one, we're preparing to file both studies. And ultimately that conversation will take place shortly, and once that conversation takes place, we'll update the market accordingly. But I would say in general, regulators have been very, very supportive to what we've been doing with this drug. So the question is, how many centers perform these procedures on these patients? So they're highly specialized. We have about 200 pediatric centers in the U.S. We were in 40 of them in this study, which is like the big KOL centers, but it's more or less concentrated. Same thing, we were pretty much everywhere in Europe except Germany and Austria. Those countries do their own studies in pediatric oncology, but outside of those countries, we were in every single pediatric center in Europe. We were in Japan, we were in Australia, we were in New Zealand with this drug. We're in Canada as well. So we've served this community for the last decade. Well, it's available and not, right, in the sense that you have to buy so the question is, are physicians jumping the gun and prescribing the cyanide antidote kit? There's something unique to our formulation that is actually critical to the safety of these patients. Once the drug is approved, it's my belief it will be highly unlikely that they'll be doing that. We've heard of anecdotal evidence of some physicians doing that, but the number has been relatively small based on our own internal research. Again, we feel like it will be highly unethical to prescribe a drug without a label for that has no efficacy, safety, and efficacy data in pediatrics or human, for that matter, for these patients. Sorry, you had another question? Yeah, so the question is, do we plan to commercialize this on our own or do we partner this out? I think it's a hybrid model. So in some places, so United States is fairly easy. We've been in these centers. We know where they are. We know who the physicians are. And it's a uniform law. So there's no problem from that perspective. And because of the experience that we have on the board, both commercially and operating this type of business, we have a pretty good idea of what would it take from an infrastructure perspective to, if we go down the path of building it, we know what it is. And it's not a large number. In terms of Europe, things are a little trickier there, because what you have is you have highly diverse geographies. And although we've been pretty much in every hospital there as well, to set up a commercial infrastructure, it's actually quite costly. So what you'll probably see there is to do some sort of a hybrid model where we do a distribution deal with people that are already serving these centers in those countries. And some of the larger countries, perhaps, we keep on our own. So with that, we can go downstairs also for the breakout session. But thank you all for the good questions. And we have two Fennec foxes here. So for the ones that ask the good questions, you can pick one stuffed animal. Thank you.